Log Talk Radio is supposed
Log
to
Talk
say.
Radio.
This is from Kilimanjaro, Tanzania.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. From time to time, we will have a special presentation on a variety of topics. Homeopathy is a show hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brooke. Please contact HWC if you would like to help support the show as a sustaining member or have suggestions for future shows. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Please share by tweeting on Twitter, posting on Facebook and MySpace, and all other social networks. You may select the widget and place the player on your blog or website. With gratitude to all our listeners, let's go!
Okay.
It's playing on its own, and seems like the internet might be a little bit slow here today, but we are very fortunate to have Dr. Teresa Dale, PhD, NPCCA, and the pioneer of safe hormone rejuvenation with 20,000 case studies, and she is the author of the book, Revitalize Your Hormones, Dr. Dale's 7 Steps to a Healthier, Happier, and Sexier You. She has formulated her own product line and trains health providers globally. Dr. Dale is also the Dean of the California College of Natural Medicine and President of the Wellness Center. Dr. Dale's interest in non-invasive therapies became her passion when she was diagnosed with a uterine tumor at age 22. After healing herself of this tumor, using natural methods, of course, she decided to dedicate her life to helping others to do the same. And Dr. Dale is featured on The Lisa Show, NBC News, Vogue, Extra, and Homeopathy Today. And if anybody is a member of the National Center for Homeopathy, you can go to homeopathic.org and sign up there. You will get Homeopathy Today, their regular, might be quarterly journal. And she is a board-certified naturopathic doctor and the owner and founder of the Wellness Center for Research and Education, Bioresonance Research, and I think I've given you just about most of the stuff that I have here for you. Teresa, Dr. Dale, we are ready to talk about lots of different interesting topics that are coming up in our news feeds today. But let's begin just with your personal journey to get people on the same page as to how you got started.
Well, I mean, that is the age-old question, isn't it? It's like, how did I get started into practicing homeopathy and natural medicine? Well, like most of us that work in the healing profession, it starts with our own experience, and that was when I was 22, I was diagnosed with a uterine tumor on top of my uterus. They didn't know, and I didn't know whether it was cancerous or not, but after seeing my mother go through 9 surgeries, I knew what not to do, and that is they wanted to do surgery, and I said, no, I don't know how to fix it, but I'm going to fix it, because I created it, so I'm going to fix it. And so I set about a search in health food store. The first health food store I ever set in my foot in was in New York City. I was living in Manhattan and went into this health food store and picked up a book by Paavo Arola called How to Get Well. And I looked up the section in tumors, fibroids, cancerous, other, whatever types of tumors you can possibly have, fatty tumors. And I picked the most rigid diet that was the most restrictive because I didn't know what kind of tumor it was. And I changed my diet completely. I changed my thinking, thought process, stopped smoking cigarettes, stopped eating hot dogs, stopped eating junk food, and I started making a change and a shift. And I think the biggest thing that I stopped and I didn't do was I didn't have any fear, okay? Mm-hmm. And that, in reflecting through you know, working in studying in Germany for 9 years, homeopathy and natural medicine, naturopathic medicine, the emotions play such a huge role in all disease that I think that was the thing that probably helped me the most, was that the fear would have been the surgery, okay? I had no fear whatsoever. I just knew that this had to be the answer because the other thing wasn't the answer, and I was only 22. I didn't know anything. So I said, okay, we're going to do this, and this feels good to me, and I trusted my gut. And so after it worked, after 6 months, and I didn't have the tumor anymore, and they did all their x-rays and things like that, then I decided, okay, I guess I can do this. I can do a good job at this. Maybe I could help other people. So I decided to go to school for it, you know, for naturopathy and I didn't learn about homeopathy a little bit later, maybe another 4 or 5 years. I learned about homeopathic medicine and cured myself of a infected ear so bad on my right side that it was the whole area was swollen and red and pussy, and under my ear, everything around it. And I was at I went to a homeopathic talk in Washington, D.C. by Dr. George Viktukas, and he just happened to be mentioning about ears, you know, and I went in and I was hoping, God, I got to fix this thing because nothing's working and it's painful and it's been like this for months. So I went in and sat down and he started talking about ears and he started saying, you know, no, if it's right-sided, I'm thinking, yeah, it's right-sided. Yeah.
Yeah.
Then you want to do belladonna. And
yeah.
You want to do it in a 4C. And he had them at the back of the room. So
oh my
when
goodness.
There was a break, I just made a
beeline
for the back of the room, got the 4C, took it once. I felt an immediate draining in moments.
Mm.
So at that point, I was like I was like, just soaking up every bit of information I could because I saw how quickly homeopathy can work. And since then,
yes.
I've seen it, you know. And, you know, when I was near Chernobyl, when in Germany and Switzerland and France and Chernobyl blew up, and that was pretty near to it because it was coming that way, and then it was raining, so it brings the rads down. I was deathly ill with flu-like symptoms, didn't know what it was because they didn't announce that it blew up until 2 weeks after it blew up. And, you know, swollen knees, hairs kind of weird, falling out in like little clumps, flu-like fever symptoms, fatigue, you know, and I thought, what the heck is this all of a sudden? So I went to one of my teachers over there who does electrodiagnosis because we learned to do testing with homeopathy, which is my preferred way to do it. And they said, you've got radiation poisoning. Where did you get that? Because they didn't announce it yet. I said, I have no idea. Well, we're going to put you on radiation, nosodes, and give you drainage, and we're going to do this and this and this. And so, wow, did that help right away. We'd bring the knees down, the swelling down. It was just amazing. And I was on a remedy called magentum. I don't know if you know that one. It's a color. It's a color magentum. And I was taking a 5M potency of it because they said that this tested very good, that this would bring it down. And sure enough, I'm telling you, it helped tremendously.
How did they find out of magentum? I know I've heard, of course, you know, the
indigo, magenta, yeah.
Heard about granite and other stones and the radium and other kinds of things for radioactive material.
Well, right. So they do electrodiagnosis testing, which is EAV, developed by Dr. Reinhard Foll, V-O-L-L, and he invented it almost 100 years ago, and it's a main system of testing. And most doctors who use it use homeopathy to find out what the heck is going on with the person's body. And you could test anything on acupuncture meridians. You know, it's like a non-invasive test. So they said, you've got radiation. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, what is this? And then about 4 days later, they announced that it blew up, and I went, oh, my God. So I got on some nosodes as well as some drainage formulas. And unfortunately, all the food was tainted because everything that was sitting outside had it on it. And so I went to my family's home in Switzerland, and that was the only country that reported the truth. Every 15 minutes, how many rads are on the top of the Alps and how many rads are on the ground in three languages, including English. Mm-hmm. And they told us, do not eat the food, anything that has been, you know, that's sitting outside, any milk that was delivered today or yesterday or a certain day, you know. I mean, they were, don't drink the water. You have to drink bottled water before a certain date. I mean, that was the only country that really took care of people. That's what I have to tell you. That was astonishing that it was the only place that I could find out the truth. And I was, like, glued to the TV set. So I had to leave there and come back to the United States to get far enough away from it because I couldn't eat. And the symptoms would go away, and then I would go outside, and the symptoms would come back. So then they
intuned. So you would go outside right here in America?
No, in Switzerland or Germany, wherever, and I would just get the symptoms back. And so I left for the United States, and then I was able to heal myself, continuing with homeopathy and detoxification and saunas and niacin and herbs for my kidneys and my liver, because it's a real serious thing. So, you know, so I've used homeopathy on myself for so many different things and for my patients on just about everything you can think of. And we studied, of course, classical, but then we veered into complex formulas and, you know, learned a lot about testing and how to test the formulas to find out the right potency. And that has really, really been awesome for helping people because, you know, many people will come in and say, you know, Dr. Dale, I tried homeopathy. It doesn't work. For the life of me, I can't understand that. Unless if they were given the wrong potency, they had caffeine, they did something that they say, no, I didn't have caffeine. I followed the directions. It didn't do anything, and I still have this problem. And so, you know, when I test them and I test for a different remedy, a completely different, you know, and so I believe in testing very much.
Can you use the muscle testing? Is that what you're using, muscle testing, or another way?
I use my own type of testing that I developed called neurophysical testing, and it's part muscle testing. And part of it is using homeopathic filters to filter out mistakes, to filter out certain frequencies. So I use homeopathy and wear it on my body to filter out different things so that I pick up exactly what we need to do right away. Because in the United States, people don't have patience like they do in Germany. You know, they want it done. They want it now. They want it yesterday. And sometimes homeopathy doesn't work that way. Even when you pick the right remedy, it goes through layers, you know, layers and layers and layers of things. And it may heal something that's unexpected and they're not even looking for and they don't even remember. And then it goes through something else. So it may not always work in a timely way for them, albeit it will work 100% if they give it time and they don't drink caffeine and don't do things you're not supposed to do, you know. Mm-hmm. So,
but a lot of people say you can, if the remedy is really good, then you can drink coffee and come in contact with the classical things that they say that you shouldn't. Do you not find that to be true? You find coffee and mints and things like that?
Well, there are some traditional things about me with homeopathy. And one is, one is with the Germans, it's like it's really solid, okay? The homeopathic education is solid. And if there is a chance of it not working, it could be coffee, it could be caffeine, it could be chocolate, because there's caffeine in chocolate. And so if there is a chance of it not working, could be that. So I don't take any chances because I don't want people to say, well, why didn't you tell me that, you know? So I would rather just say, don't do this, don't do that. We'll get some results really quick. This is your best shot of getting it done as quickly as possible, is not having this. Because if you have this, there's always a chance it will not work well or as well. So albeit, I've had experiences that really, that really counteract or educate what the Germans taught. I've taken a very high potency of cephalinum because it was, my mother had that, and that was causing a lot of her issues. And I tested I had it genetically as a miasm. And so I said, okay, I'm going to take this thing. I took it, and it really worked. It worked right away. I wasn't drinking caffeine or anything. And it brought about a lot of the unwinding symptoms for me. I had a lot of the symptoms that my mother had, and I saw it come up in a 24 to 48-hour period. And I thought, okay, I'm going to let this go. I'm going to let it work. Took it once, let it work, keep it working. Well, a month and a half later, things were still happening where layers were still coming off, and I said, okay, now, this is enough, because, I had breakouts on my legs, I had a lot of things, and it was really coming out. I wonder what will happen if I have a cup of caffeine. What happened was absolutely nothing.
Absolutely nothing?
Yeah, in other words, I had the caffeine, and it didn't stop the process of the remedy, which was already mm-hmm. in process of unwinding. Mm-hmm. And so I had a cup of caffeine, nothing, it was still happening. I said, okay, I waited a week, it was still happening. I mean, all the issues my mother had in her life that caused her 9 surgeries, okay, I just felt them go through my body, and things were amazing and not so good. Okay, so I
do
said,
you feel
okay,
other? Do you feel? I mean, you see a lot of patients. Do you feel that these people also are reliving their parents' problems, issues?
It's sometimes, but I want to finish with this one because I went to the next level of caffeine. I said, okay, I'm going to try a double espresso and see what that does.
You're living in California?
Yes.
Okay, that's
and so I tried this double espresso, and boy, it just continued. It didn't stop it until it was, until it was stopping on its own. And I think it happened like that because it was in the process of unwinding, and I mean, there was just nothing that could stop it, honestly. And it wasn't very pleasant. But do I feel that with other people? I see people all the time where they come in and they say they tried a remedy with a homeopath and it didn't work. And I said, could be the wrong remedy, could be you had caffeine. Well, I have caffeine every day. And so so that was what I got. The remedy was right. And they were just, when they stopped the caffeine, it worked. Then they took it. So I just tell people not to have caffeine because I want to do it the way that I was taught, which I've seen people with Down syndrome. I've seen serious, serious stuff clear up by doing that. So I'm not going to mess with something that I know works. But I think in my case was that I hit on the miasm. You know, I hit on the miasm that they tested in Germany. This was it. Sometimes, you know, when you have some time, take this remedy because in this potency because you need to unwind this. I think a lot of people do have this, and this is bringing on symptomology. How do you feel?
How do I feel about taking a Nosode? How do I feel
how do you feel about people's stuff unwinding?
Yeah, I think that sometimes it's more rapid and sometimes it takes considerable amount of time. And also you're dealing not just with the remedy, you're dealing with a whole lifestyle because you kind of started to answer all the questions that I had for you just as you
Uh-oh.
Spoke. initially you said that it was the fear, and you said that what did you say at the very beginning, that it wasn't just the physical things, but you knew that the body could heal itself. And I was wondering, how did you ever get that idea into your head when you were 20, in your 20s, very young, that you were able to heal yourself? And that's really what surprises me, as opposed to going along with what the doctors, traditional doctors, might have said. But I think you kind of answered it.
Yeah, because of my childhood, I mean, I knew what the opposite would be. I already saw the opposite. I saw my mother go through 9 surgeries. I saw that, and I said, okay, that's not the answer.
That's not the answer. Okay, so it's kind of like
so,
the fear
and then,
was there.
And then I was not a confident person. I was a very rejected kind of person, feeling rejected, feeling low self-esteem, very meek, very mild, very mousy kind of person, okay? And I was not feeling really great about myself. So this kind of gave me, you know, a little kick in the butt. Like, okay, what are you going to do now? Now you have this. So I didn't even tell my parents. I didn't tell anybody because they would want me to do the traditional route, and there was no way I was going to do that because, you know, I think kids are really smart. I mean, all kids are smart. When you're raised, you watch your parents, you learn things from them, and hopefully you look and see, hey, do I want to be like that in my life? Do I want to have this happen to me in my life? How do I want my life to be? And I remember thinking those things when I was a child. And so it was, you know, I was just, you know, I don't know why I thought I could heal myself. I just knew that's what would have to happen because...
Like the other way wasn't working.
The other way would never work. How would that work? I mean, you know, so it was just like, okay, here's your choice. I only knew 2 choices, and I picked one, and I picked the right one.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems to me with all of the doubts that you might have spoken about being mousy or whatever, you really had a great inner strength to be able to take steps into your own hands and do it the way that you felt you needed to take care of yourself. Obviously, anybody out there who's homeopath and knows their remedies is thinking silica, that you did have the strength and that self-identity that you were looking for was just blooming from the decisions that you made to heal yourself. And what I was saying earlier was it's not just the remedy, but the fact that you totally changed your whole lifestyle. Everybody back then when we were young, we were eating hot dogs. We were, you know, hot dogs and beans or Franks and deli meat and all of these other kinds of things, fried foods that are not really so great for you. And only a small percentage of the population was really looking very carefully and closely at that, but you had already made those decisions, started to clean your whole diet. And that's why I'm saying the remedy itself for something to be work, a lot of times what's working is the remedies helping the person to start changing their lifestyle, to take
I
better
agree.
Decisions. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I didn't take a homeopathic remedy. I didn't even know what that was. I just knew that, you know, that I needed to do this, and I didn't have any fear. And I didn't have any fear because I felt it in my gut, and I think a lot of people don't pay any attention. They don't pay attention to what they feel inside of them. They give their power away. And mm-hmm. I had decided at that point, like, I'm doing it this way because I see the other way, and there is no way I'm going to do that. So might as well not even tell anybody, just go about my life. And I really didn't focus on it in a negative way ever, not even once. I always felt like, okay, this gentleman, this doctor, wrote this book. He wrote this book. He's giving this diet. He wouldn't give this diet unless it was something he has tried with his patients. So there's no reason why it couldn't work for me. That's what I thought. And for the first time in my life, I had a positive attitude.
Mm-hmm. So you did have a positive attitude. Makes a big difference.
At that moment, I never had too much of a positive attitude before. I can't mm-hmm. say that. I can just say that it forced me into a positive attitude by looking at it in, you know, like a hopeful way. Some people are givers of hope, and some people take hope away, okay? Mm. And they take hope away from other people. And so I feel that homeopathy is a very hope-giving modality to use with people, because they do start feeling changes, even if they're subtle, and even if they don't realize that emotionally, mentally, that, hey, they're doing a little bit better. And then they sometimes say, well, but my real problem isn't gone yet. And I always say, just give it a little time. You know, it's going to start in one way, and then you're going to see it go into other ways, because there are layers. You know, mm-hmm. especially if a person's had drugs, if they've had any allopathic medicine, mm-hmm. and they've had, you know, then there's homotoxicology, right? And so, you know, I mean, once you take a medication for it, I mean, homeopathy works along with medications. You can give it. I prefer to have people not take medication or take very little or start cutting down on it. Because the medication does suppress the energy pattern that you're trying to resolve, to eliminate, to heal, to neutralize. And, you know, with the things that I've discovered, some awesome things about homeopathy, it's like my love, you know. I've discovered that when you take a homeopathic remedy, and this is one of the things we worked with in Europe, was that we've tracked it. It travels along meridian pathways, which are channels, and it finds exactly the like or the similar frequency, and it neutralizes it. So it creates this electromagnetic signal in the body that when it goes in, it travels along the meridian pathways, finds the most similar frequency, and it nails it. And, you know, that's the most beautiful thing about homeopathy, is you never want to stop that process of that happening, you know?
Mm-hmm. So you really stepped into your power, and you have learned so much and discovered so much. I thought, you know, we publicized a show about a lot of ways that you can detox, and that seemed to be where you stepped into your power. You cleaned yourself out, and you recovered from all of these illnesses, really severe illnesses. And what most doctors might say, oh, you just had spontaneous remission. But you didn't. You believed in the steps that you took personally to empower yourself and be in a better state of health. So then you went ahead and you said you wanted to teach everybody. That's what it sounds like. You wanted to tell the world.
Well, no, I practiced for a good 20 years before I started teaching. So I've been in practice for 30 years.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. So I've worked on everything and everybody, and I think homeopathy is the most powerful form of medicine. I mean, I'm exposed to all kinds of things. You know, people are doing all kinds of wonderful things, okay? But I have never seen anything work as effectively as homeopathic medicine, ever. And I feel that politically there is an issue now of the FDA trying to keep certain remedies away from people. And this, I have a big issue with this, because remember when tuberculinum used to be, you could get it?
Yes, absolutely. So you know, now, are there people working, are there people working on enabling doctors and citizens to get these nosodes? They're just energy. They say there's nothing in them. How could it be harmful?
Right. Well, you know, it's since I formulate my products and I have them made by licensed, registered homeopathic pharmacies. They're licensed and registered by the FDA. The FDA says all of a sudden, you know, well, now you can't use tuberculinum OTC. It's only for registered medical, licensed medical doctors. Well, we know that there aren't a whole lot of them using that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, so, I mean, it takes it away from people, which I don't like. And then there's other things, like Staph aureus. Staph aureus is phenomenal. It's a nosode, but with a drainage remedy, all these things can work very, very well with people. Sometimes they need drainage. But that's been taken off because now it's only for licensed medical doctors. And I don't really feel good about the politics that are played with people's health. You know?
Do you have any solutions? Do you have? I know it's, we don't like what's happening, but what kind of solutions do we have?
Well, there are, the solutions would be to write letters to the FDA and to their, it's classified, homeopathy is classified as a drug, even though they swear that there's nothing in it, like you said, and, you know, but they do have equipment that can measure and see if there's a 3X or if there's a 6X. They probably don't go any higher than 6X in their measurement, but they do have equipment that can test it. So, you know what I would do is I don't think they have equipment that can test over a 12X. That I'm not sure of.
Beyond Avogadro's number, they can't check.
Right, but I think even a 12X they can't check.
Okay.
That's what I've heard. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what I've heard. And they do go to pharmacies with the equipment, and they do check stuff, you know. So my opinion would be to write letters to the FDA and their drug division and to tell them that all homeopathy should be made available to the general public. If you say there's nothing in it, then why keep it from them? Yet you have 200 years of research and thousands, if not millions, of doctors over the last 200 years using it effectively without side effects, and yet you have all of the medical books, the materia medicas. So why are you keeping it from the, you know, from the general public? And just to write strong letters.
I don't know how, you know, if you go on any petitions, you're looking at millions and millions of signatures, and sometimes they are helpful and they'll be the tipping point that puts the visibility for that particular issue or person or problem. But homeopathy is really off the radar screen for the majority of Americans. So,
and yes, and that the reason why is because of the unavailability and the misinformation about it. You know, and otherwise, if more doctors were using it, and this is why I train health providers to use it, and even the simplest things to use and to always incorporate it, And it's becoming more and more popular, because I looked at a research study not too long ago where it's increasing, popularity is increasing by 10 to 20% a year in homeopathy. And because I think that all natural health is increasing now. More people are into it. I don't know if you
yes.
find that, but I definitely see that. And, there's just tremendous amount of usage of homeopathy throughout Europe and in France and Germany, in Switzerland, in India. My God, there's 100 medical hospitals that are homeopathic and teaching hospitals. So in other countries, they have a phenomenal amount of information and education, and their doctors and all of their citizens are used to using it. So I think it's just a control issue here of controlling it, and because of the drug companies, the big pharma.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. I'm going to kind of just give a quick little plug for Dr. Pawan Parikh. Like you say, the folks who are the doctors over there in India really have thousands of cases under their belt, so much experience. Dr. Pawan Parikh is going to be here near me in Charlotte, North Carolina, this Saturday and Sunday for 2 full days of teaching. I'll talk about that a little bit more, but I just wanted to let folks know in case they know somebody who lives along the East Coast, wants to take a drive in and join and learn a real lot. He's going to have power-packed amount of information. So what do you want to talk about detoxing in today's world, or do you want to talk about other kinds of political things? Like, I've been doing a lot of talking about the TPP, which I'm going to continue to do after I speak with you. You want to talk about...
I'd like to talk about homeopathy and about drainage and the importance of drainage remedies and when you're using homeopathic medicine. A lot of people say, well, I'm using the homeopathy and I'm getting worse. Okay, so that means maybe they're taking too much, maybe they're proving it, maybe they're taking it for too long. It's not the kind of thing that you take like vitamin C, you know, where you're going to take it every day. Some people just don't know how to take it correctly, you know, and sometimes they need to have a drainage formula, too, to move it out of the lymph glands, the lymph nodes, to get the body to move it out of the organs. Now, I really believe in drainage, and I have a lymph drainage formula that handles the lymph system.
You're going to send me some of that.
Parts. Yeah.
I want some of that.
Yeah, okay, it is fantastic, and it's used with all patients, because when you have a health issue, if you don't deal with your lymph system, I mean, you know, you can take all these wonderful homeopathic medicines or herbs or whatever it is you're taking, but you have to deal with the lymph drainage. It's very, very, very important. So I have this remedy called the Lymph Detox Plus, and so it'll handle the lymph systems, all the nodes everywhere in the body and all the organs. It's a fantastic. So I believe in drainage, and I think a lot of people who are using homeopathy from the health food store versus going to a trained homeopath, they're not using drainage. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you go into Whole Foods and you pick out a homeopathic remedy, may work great. You may feel like, oh, it's not working that well, or maybe that person just needs a drainage remedy, you see. Mm-hmm. So I think it's very important and to work with that. And the other thing is to work with detoxification. Now, you can use detoxification for I have remedies for health providers called mind-body meridian remedies, and they work with the emotions connected with the organs and the meridians. And so an acupuncturist could use it, could stick their needle into an alcohol solution of a homeopathic remedy, the right one for a certain meridian, needle the meridian, and you could actually feel the chi open in that entire meridian going through the body. And that could be all the patient needs. You know?
So you would take the formula to your local acupuncturist and ask them to make an application with that formula.
Right, but it would have to be unopened so that it's sterile. You know, when you first open it, it can't be something that you put your mouth on the little dropper or anything.
Oh, yeah.
And believe it or not, people do all kinds of things. And then, in certain states, acupuncturists are not allowed to use homeopathy. It's against their acupuncture license. I know in Florida it's wide open. I believe in North Carolina it's wide open. But there are certain states where it's kind of iffy as far as the acupuncturist actually using homeopathy. But in Germany, they taught us how to dip the needle into the correct homeopathic liquid remedy and then needle one point, okay, and have the homeopathy go into the system and travel along the meridian pathway that way. It's called, homeopuncture. And so a homeopuncture that is taught in the Maldives, it's taught in the Mauritius Islands, it's taught in some parts of England, and it's done only with the liquid form of homeopathy. So, I mean, homeopathy, and then, of course, in Germany, you've got different pharmacies that make hermetically sealed vials of homeopathic remedy, and the homeopathy is in water. And that is for injecting a doctor would inject the patient intramuscularly, or you would open the snap the little vial open and put it in an IV. I mean, you know, some of the hospitals, when it comes to treating critically ill people, like in England, there's a hospital, the Royal Hospital, and they work with homeopathy in there as well for critically ill people. So, you know, it should be moving along in the United States. I believe it is. I believe more people are knowing about it. But I am not satisfied with the rate at which it's growing. I wish it were growing quicker. So I'm really glad you have the radio show.
Thank you. Do you think the acupuncturist could use the formulas or the remedies with the moxibustion, or would that just burn it off, or would that be
That's a really great question. I think that the moxa, if it weren't too close, could help. Like if you put it on so it was really, really burning, I think that would help. But I don't know as far as the frequency of the homeopathic medicine. I think as soon as you put it on the acupuncture point, then it's going to go in right away. But I think the moxa could help drive it in. And, you know, maybe it would only work for a second until then the moxa would burn up the frequency because
it's so hot.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so, you know, it's just like using a laser. A lot of people say, oh, they use homeopathy on different points and then they use a laser on top of it. But I think the frequency of the laser will influence and change the frequency of the homeopathy that you just put on because you're introducing another frequency right on top of it. So
that's interesting.
Do you know what I mean?
I've never heard of anybody doing it, of using
the
laser.
There's chiropractors that are doing that. They're getting a laser, which is not the kind of thing you do for presentations. It's a real, like a medical laser, and then mm-hmm. they'll putting a homeopathy on an area or on an acupuncture point, and then they put the laser, and they think that drives it in. But I think that changes the frequency. You know, you're putting this strong frequency on top of the most powerful energetic medicine you can use. What is that going to do to it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, my thing is not changing it. Yeah, my thing would be not changing it. And that's why I think the subtlety of taking the needle and dipping it in the remedy and then putting it on, you know, needling the point, I mean, that seems like a perfect way to introduce it to the body if you're an acupuncturist. So whatever
mm-hmm. And
a person,
do you use olfaction as well?
I think that would be any kind of way, and I think olfaction is a wonderful way of doing it. But I think any way of getting it on the body, on the acupuncture points, you know, wherever it is, but I don't like using anything to necessarily drive it in unless you're going to do it with a needle where the part of the needle actually goes subcutaneously in under the skin. Then it would, like, immediately travel along the channels, the energy pathways. So,
well, now that you're talking about needles, I'm going to change the subject.
okay.
I'm thinking of vaccines when you start talking about needles. And, you know, what you just brought into my mind was you're an acupuncturist and you're taking the needle and putting it a specific point on the body into the meridian, and you're having an effect on the whole person. So if you have an injection, it could it accidentally be going into a meridian line channel that would actually make an effect on the person injecting these toxins?
Another injecting what toxins? You mean what would they be injected?
A vaccine?
Because the colon meridian runs in a couple of different places on the body, and one is down the arm on the side of the arm where vaccines are. Put in up your nose. They can be put in many different areas because they have them for children so that they're palatable. And but yes, if you get an injection, it could affect a meridian. It could affect a meridian, a disease. It could. People say, oh, vaccines are like homeopathy. No, not at all. Nothing like homeopathy. They actually have a whole lot of substance in it. They're live, you know.
Right.
And they have aluminum and they have heavy metals, as well as mercury, and so. You know, I've read all of these reports now that they say, oh, well, the Tamiflu, most of it doesn't have mercury. But the ones that don't have mercury, they put things like aluminum in instead, you know. And so the truth rarely comes out of the mouths of the big pharma, in my opinion. It's only my opinion. But mm-hmm. from working with patients for 30 years, I can say that every person I've ever seen who's on meds is having symptoms from the meds that are morphing their real conditions. And sometimes it's very hard to figure out the right remedy for the person when you don't have the right symptomology because the symptomology has morphed due to the drug, and that's why the testing is so impressive. It works so well because you can bypass what the drugs are doing and go right to the real nitty-gritty of what the issue is when it came to be in the person's body, at what age in the body they got it, and you can do that in a very short period of time, but it's all hands-on. And I teach that course in California through the California College of Natural Medicine. And I have one coming up in February and one coming up in April. And
okay, great.
Yeah. So, I mean, it incorporates the testing with testing homeopathy or supplements, diet, food, emotions, whatever you want to test. So that's why I believe in the testing, because of people's situations today, you know, what their disease process is.
We want people to know how to contact you if they're interested in the course February or April, I think you said, in the
yes.
California College of Natural Medicine. So how would they contact you?
They would contact us through they'd have to go to traditionalnaturopathy.com.
Okay.
Traditionalnaturopathy.com. And they would have to go to the link that says contact us, and then they would, they would put in their request to be called. Now, if they would like to check out my other websites where I have homeopathic formulas like the lymph detox, they would go to thewellnesscenter.net and then click on products and then order. And there's just a list of everything there and a lot of detailed information about it.
Okay, great. Wow, I know we could probably ask you so many more questions and get going on new topics. I'm just fascinated with all the different ways that you approach healing and the detoxification. I guess I had a question about that because Manfred Mueller, the president for the North American Society of Homeopaths, is going to be on the Health In Show this coming Monday, January 27th, talking about the Mueller method, and he uses reverse tautopathology, which is reversing the drugs and the different impacts on the body, and you're saying you're able to bypass doing that with your method.
Yes. And I do, I don't bypass detoxing them. I bypass their symptoms so that I can find the underlying homeopathic remedy that the person needs. I detoxify the medications using organic herbs and also homeopathic remedies. So you have to detox the medications out of the person's body for sure. Okay,
mm-hmm.
When you're taking a case to get clear about symptomology before where they are now, and sometimes when they come in, they can't even think, they can't even remember what their symptoms exactly was like 2 years ago before they started the medication. So I do the testing and I teach the testing so that we can get bypassed the symptoms that, you know, that were from the medication, so we can go back to the symptomology of before, you know, when their first symptoms started, like was it childhood, when was it, and then test to see on those things what the issues were, because the medications we just have to get out of the body with homeopathy, with diet, and with herbs. So I work with outpatient clinics of hospitals, and sometimes when those people come out, they're on 19 meds. My job is to train their doctors to get them off the meds as quickly as possible and to detoxify the body using herbs and homeopathic medicine and diet. I don't believe there's one way to do it. I believe you have to integrate things, and you have to be open-minded about doing the best thing for the person. So if you take away your ego and if you take away everything else and you just test the patient, the body tells you exactly what it needs. So the body tells you, you know, is it good to have these herbs to detoxify the liver from this terrible medication the person's been on for 2 years? And the body will tell you yes if it's good, no if it doesn't want it. So rather than think that as a homeopath or as a medical doctor or anything else that you know it all for that person, it's just a total lie. You don't know, because that person has all kinds of secrets and things within that being, and so if you test the person, then you can find out what that particular person needs. And that's the way that, I find that we get great success. And that's all I'm interested in, is helping the patient to get well.
Do you have to be an intuitive or sensitive in order to do this special form of testing? Because I don't know that I'm so good at it. I suppose if there was, you could hook somebody up to a machine and let the machine do the testing. Even that I question, but how do you feel about that?
Well, I question the homeopathic remedies that the machine diagnoses the person. I think as a human being that you're a lot smarter than the machine. And I think that you do not have to be intuitive, and you do not have to be sensitive. You just have to be able to be neutral.
Mm-hmm.
And we teach doctors how to be neutral, and then you need to follow the steps. I have trained people, and the youngest person I ever trained was 7 years old to test her brother and to test herself because she was really sick and she loved the testing. So I got to help her by teaching her what I was doing, and she would end up going to school and testing people and saying, oh, you shouldn't have that hot dog because your liver doesn't like it. Let's put it on your body and see how your body likes the sugar. You know, you see what I'm saying? So I've seen that anybody can learn unless you have an identity that you can't do it, or unless you believe you can't do it, or you believe you're not sensitive. I believe that people can do it as long as they can be neutral. They don't even have to, they can do it in such a way where it's almost like a placebo study, you know, and it will be correct. You don't have to know anything. You just have to do it. You just have to follow the steps and do it. It's pretty easy. So we even train medical doctors to do it.
Well, it sounds like you're pretty. It sounds like you're pretty have close ties with the medical community near you, and they recognize you, your work, and that they're sending patients to you, which I feel is going to be the up and coming mode of healthcare today. That doctors are just so overwhelmed with their busy practices to begin with, and they see a patient for maybe 3 to 15 minutes max, and in order for them to really care for the patient fully and completely, especially with things like obesity and diabetes, heart disease, and anxiety, that they're going to be referring, they're going to have on board naturopaths, homeopaths, and just wellness coaches, health coaches. This is going to be the up-and-coming thing that they're going to fill the gap.
Well, you know, I totally agree with you. And what I do is I recommend that they take my homeopathic medical practitioner training, which is at the California College of Natural Medicine. And it's a certificate training. And so, you know, if they take this training, and many of them, believe it or not, really want to find an alternative to working with drugs. And so homeopathy is a perfect alternative, you know. And so they, a lot of them take this training, and it's an entry-level training. And it's called a homeopathic medical practitioner training, and it covers every different kind of homeopathic studies, because it's modeled after my training in Germany, which is very strict, you know, very, very strict.
You studied with Vathulkas?
I studied with him for 3 days. And then the rest of it was with physicists and biophysicists learning homeopathy and to test homeopathic medicine. And it was centered around homeopathy and testing it, to not only learn about what the remedies do, but to be able to test them and to see if it's the right one for the person and what meridian is it going to work on. And, I mean, you know, it's just amazing. And it went along also with acupuncture, learning acupuncture meridians and how we can track where the homeopathic remedy is going in the body. And, you know, this, I mean, it was pretty much the highlight of my life, because it was the most fun I've ever had. Not partying fun, but in class fun, working with these most fascinating things that has really enriched my life and helped so many people. So, you know,
it's one aha moment after the next, probably. That's why you loved it so much, you know, when you're in a situation like that. So your training, it sounds like it really was very individualized medicine, even though you say evidence, science, physics, all of the things that sound very scientifically based, it sounds very individualized by the way that you're describing it.
See, you are most intuitive. Most intuitive. It absolutely was, because the testing is, you test each patient and you find out, you get all the symptoms and then you test them and you look at it many different ways, you know, and then you can, if you have any, you can always search the different homeopathic materia medicas to double check, but then at the end result, you want to test the patient and make sure it's okay with that person that's lying on your table, that it may be good for 1,000 or 2,000 or a million other people, but here might be one person that doesn't want it right now. They want something else first, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's priority and it's sequencing things. So it's just the love of my life, and it's the thing that I always I always love to work with people, because, and it's the thing that people don't understand, and, you know, you have to take more time to explain it to them, you know?
A
and
lot
it's okay.
More time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's sort of like, you see, there's really nothing in this bottle. It's really energy, but you can't just say things like that. You have to explain, you know, how it works, why it works, why it's powerful, and, you know, and so that's the key. And once they use it, I mean, sometimes people just go into a health food store, they don't know anything about it, but they happen to read something like on the label, you know, like on the little Whole Foods thing about arnica. Oh yeah, arnica, it's good for this. I think I'll try it. And they don't know anything about homeopathy, but they try it and it works. It doesn't work because you know something about it. It works because you've got the right remedy for, you know, something that you're working on. And arnica is one of those magical formulas. You know,
mm-hmm.
I just love it. Yeah.
The polycrest that goes across the board for so many people, the
oh
one remedy
God.
that seems to work when all the others don't, yeah, and works rapidly when you need it to, can be, you know, for heart medicine or emotional problems, just everything. So, and that's the way we know just a smattering about all of our remedies. If the more we use them, the more we learn about their potential. Well,
right.
You know,
a whole
yeah. hour has gone by, and it's
oh my
up
goodness,
to,
it's our time. Yes.
Yeah. So it's up to you whether you want to continue to speak or you want to. You have to get on with your day.
Well, I really need to move on to the next appointment,
yes.
Which is in 15 minutes.
Oh,
but
I do so appreciate
your having me on today and the opportunity to reach out to people and to meet you and know you a little bit better.
Well, it's been a joy. And so, folks, if you're interested in what you've been listening to, you can find Dr. Teresa Dale at traditionalnaturopathy.com and the Wellness Center. What was it? The other
it's
one?
It's thewellnesscenter.net, correct.
Thewellnesscenter.net, yes. And we will be talking to you again sometime in 2014, perhaps. And we wish you well this evening. And, folks, I'm going to stay on the line when she drops off the call today because I have other things to talk about. News about the vaccine issue. There is the dangers of the hepatitis B vaccine by Professor Bonnie S. Dunbar, PhD, and how she's exploding out this information to the medical world and what she has found about that issue. And also, I want to encourage everyone, please, on homeopathyworldcommunity.com, there's a button for the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreements, that are going to be fast-tracked through Congress, and therefore the whole system's going to collapse if we allow this to happen. Hopefully we won't. And you need to just become a little bit enlightened about it so that we uncover things
that
are
done.
What's
the website? What's the website on that one?
The TPP, if you go to homeopathyworldcommunity.com, you will go ahead and see a button that says Stop TPP. And you will be totally blown out of the water when you find out that the government, based on three senators behind closed doors, have decided that they're going to fast-track this through so that it covers agriculture, healthcare, drug patenting, GMO, suing the international community basically for, like Monsanto could say, oh, you're not letting us plant or sell Monsanto seeds there. We're going to lose all of these millions of dollars. We're going to sue you for the loss. Things like that. Communications, you won't be able to get on the internet where you'd like to go. Those are just a little bit of what this really encompasses. So you want to learn about it.
Yeah, I'm going to go there after I'm done with my appointment and click on that button, and I'm sure everybody who's listening to this will do the same. And we need to get this information out. So
absolutely.
Thank you again, Debbie. I'm going to say goodbye for now, and hopefully we'll get together in the future.
Wonderful. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Everyone else, if you will stick it out with me a little bit more, I'll just tell you what's coming up. I did mention that Manfred Mueller, the president of the North American Society of Homeopaths, is going to be with us on the Health In Show. That's 11 a.m. Eastern Time on nissancommunications.com, the Health In channel. And he's going to be talking about the method that he's been using successfully as the detox. It's called reverse tautopathology, where he goes through and finds perhaps a person took a drug at one time or was given a drug during labor or when they were young or an asthmatic, something that really impacted their whole body's function, and then what he does to reverse the negative effects on the body. That's what he's going to be teaching us about. And tomorrow, that's Thursday, January 23rd at 1 p.m. in the afternoon, I will be on Blog Talk Radio again with Alan Phillips talking about vaccinations and your rights in America. And we simulcast on Blog Talk Radio, Homeopathy World Community, and Freedomizer Radio. And you can go to either one of those websites. The Freedomizer Radio will have a chat up, and you can call into the call line. You can even call in tonight as I'm speaking, and I'll take a quick look over there at the dashboard to see if anybody sends me a call. I wanted to mention this story that just hit the news. Oh, there's two things really. One is the chemical spill is they just announced today that the chemical spill, they didn't tell us previously, has a second a polyglycol ether in the Elk River leak that's included. That was just announced about 3 hours ago, that the tank not only leaked the methane compound, which would be easily absorbed into the skin, and I know that Dr. Dale did a whole radio show all about detoxing from the chemical spill and telling you, please, don't drink the water, don't shower in the water, don't bathe in the water, don't wash in the water, just use the bottled water. That's the only thing that's really safe. And I'm sure that she would have other kinds of protocols to help clear the body if you have been in contact with it. She did mention reverse osmosis water filters, and she said that it's not too costly to get one for one of your faucets. Usually I have one for my kitchen sink, and that it is much more costly but beneficial to have a whole house filter. If you can, and if you're in the area, you're going to probably want to go and visit a neighbor, a friend or a relative that is not in the region at all. And I don't know how long those chemicals are going to take to ever get cleaned out of the water table and leaking into the soil, into the ground, where and how it coats your pipes. So this is a big deal. And one of the things that she mentioned about her life dealing with Chernobyl is most of the countries were not telling the truth, were not letting the folks know exactly where all what the data was, what was actually getting leaked out into the environment. And in the same way, Fukushima, we are not getting the data, the correct data, from the government agencies. And until way later, when it's too late, when you've already eaten the food, eaten the fish, planted in the soil, bathed in the water, and done all sorts of things that we're already seeing, I do believe, and I haven't pulled this type of information up for today's show, but there is already health issues being seen in the populations that are dealing with the Fukushima all the way over to the readings on the west coast of the United States. Okay, so I wanted to talk to you today also about this vaccination issue. And that is the dangers of the hepatitis B vaccine by Professor Bonnie Dunbar, PhD. And she wanted to, she actually wrote a letter to the Director of Immunization Division in the Texas Department of Health, which is where she lives. And she introduces herself as a research scientist, a medical graduate student professor, who has worked in the areas of autoimmunity and vaccine development for 25 years, and 17 of those years were at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston. She says, "I'm not here today as an official representative of Baylor College of Medicine, but as a concerned citizen of Texas and the United States. I'm not sure that some of my colleagues would not approve of my appearance, especially those that are benefiting handsomely from pharmaceutical company income as consultants and expert witnesses while carrying out vaccine clinical trials." And so, as you know, universities and research centers get funding from pharmaceutical companies to carry on their work, for people to get paid, to continue their career. And so they're kind of indebted to the pharmaceutical companies and would be, and even if they find information that could damage the drug coming to market, they're suppressed. That information is pushed under the rug, and the people are usually told to either be quiet or they're going to lose their job. But she goes on to say in her letter, she was honored, "I was honored a few years ago by the National Institutes of Health in Washington, D.C. as, quote, the first Margaret Pittman, unquote, lecturer for my pioneering work in vaccine development. This was a most special event for me because of Dr. Pittman's contributions to early vaccines and because I understand the impact that some vaccines have had and will continue to have on our society. My ongoing research in the area of vaccine development continues to be a major commitment. I have worked extensively with the U.S. Agency for International Development and the World Health Organization programs and have a lifelong commitment to carrying our research to understand and hopefully help to solve world population as well as disease problems." So this is a person talking who's been in research 25 years and is committed to developing vaccinations. She says, "I'm speaking to you today, however, in reference to my experience with the severe adverse effects of the hepatitis B vaccine. About 5 years ago, I had two individuals working in my laboratory who were required to take the hepatitis B vaccine. Both of these individuals developed severe and apparently permanent adverse reactions as a result of this vaccine. Both of these individuals were completely healthy and very athletic before this vaccine and have now suffered severe debilitating autoimmune side effects from this vaccine. I know the complete medical history of one, Dr. Bon Dunbar, who is my brother, who developed serious rashes, joint pain, chronic fatigue, multiple sclerosis-like symptoms, and now has been affirmatively diagnosed with POTS, an autoimmune cardiovascular neurological problem. And finally, with chronic inflammatory demyelinating polyneuropathy. His problems have been attributed to the hepatitis B vaccine by over a dozen different specialists around the United States of unquestionable medical expertise. He has now been rated permanently and totally impaired at greater than 90%. His health care has already cost the state of Texas around $500,000 in the workers' compensation program to date, a figure that will continue to give rise given the severity of his health condition. And I do not know whether Dr. Dunbar knows about homeopathy or other kinds of detoxifying programs. You would think that at this point she would. She continues, my other student went partially blind following her first booster injection, a medical condition that was markedly exacerbated by her second booster, which resulted in long-term hospitalization. Personal communications are that her eyesight is continuing to deteriorate. Because she is in medical school, she has been, understandably so, afraid to pursue investigation into her medical problems in the event that they might affect her medical career. And so she brings up two points. One, that when a person has a vaccine injection and has an adverse event, that doesn't stop them necessarily, unless they're educated in the alternative news media, to recognize that a second injection of that same concoction of adjuvants and chemicals and the virus or whatever is being injected is going to make matters much worse. So obviously a lot of people get 1, 2, 3 as the protocol requires without really thinking about it in any kind of rational, critical way. And then you see the other piece, and she says she is in medical school. So this is something that we talk at length with for the past 4 years on Thursday's show with Alan Phillips, because he is an attorney at law, and he's trying to help those people who would like an exemption or a waiver, especially if they are healthcare providers, nurses, or people even working in the hospital are today required to have, let's say, an influenza vaccine or other types of vaccines. So, again, people are afraid of losing their career, everything that they have worked for their entire life, and when they come up against information that changes their belief system. So the doctor continues, as I have worked extensively in vaccine development, I am extremely sensitive to the need to evaluate the risk versus the benefits of any vaccine. Because of my established expertise in this area, it became immediately apparent to me that these two active, healthy individuals working in my laboratory developed autoimmune syndromes at a predictable immunological time frame following their booster injections to the hepatitis B vaccine. So she could see some cause and effect. She could see the time frame, the proximity of time between getting the vaccine and coming down with an illness gave her a clue. But you have to also recognize a lot of people will have an injection, will have a vaccine, and their symptoms will not come out until much later on. Other people will have immediate effects, screaming, crying, rashing, swells, loss of communication skills, eye contact, and all different, and a lot of gut problems, digestive, constipation, diarrhea, all kinds of different things that can happen as a result of a vaccine. She says, after carrying out extensive literature research on this hepatitis B vaccine, it became immediately apparent that the serious adverse side effects of this vaccine, which appear to be related to the nature of the viral protein itself, so she's kind of saying that the adverse effects is not due to the adjuvants, to the heavy metals, to the other kinds of things, that other kinds of ingredients that are used, MSG, for instance, but may be more significant, she says, than generally known or admitted. So she has that in parentheses, or admitted. They know about it, but they won't admit it. And she does seem to relate the adverse effects to the viral protein itself, not necessarily to any of the other things that are going into it, the culture that it is grown on or anything like that. I have now been in contact with numerous physicians from several countries, she says, who have independently described the identical severe reactions in thousands of Caucasians. It is obvious that their observations have been, for the most part, denied or ignored by the public health systems, as is evidenced by the serious charges against healthcare officials and pharmaceutical companies brought recently in France. I can assure you that the reversal of the vaccine mandate for children in France was not based on lack of documentation. So you can see, again, you can see here that other countries are taking other steps in regard to vaccinations, which the United States is not. They just keep pushing it forward. So in France, I have now, she says, been contacted personally by hundreds or more individuals, including children, with severe health problems and lifelong disabilities resulting in major medical costs following the administration of this vaccine. In my experience, as with my colleagues, virtually all of these individuals are Caucasians, clearly indicating a genetic linkage. So this is really, I guess, news to the general population, maybe to the medical community, maybe not so much to the vaccine industry. Because obviously you would think that they have records and data of all of these adverse events. She says, in my detailed investigation over the past 4 years, it is apparent to me, as well as others who have been investigating this, that adequate long-term follow-up information was not collected in clinical trials for this vaccine. This is especially true with respect to the Caucasian populations, in which many of these adverse effects would have been predictably been observed. In any event, the vaccine inserts, which give long lists of serious potential side effects, which I have been told that physicians do not show or discuss with their patients, are ominous. And I repeat, I say that every single show on Thursday, that there is no disclosure, no full disclosure to a parent, to a guardian, to a child, to an adult, to a teen, to people in the military, to employees in the healthcare field, to immigrants, to anybody. You do not get full disclosure about risks and benefits ratios and what could be the adverse events that you would might be wanting to pay attention to know, to be able to report that this is attributed to your vaccine. So that's where it is today. She says, many physicians have told the doctor that if this vaccine is recommended and mandated by government officials, quote, why should they look at it or discuss it with their patients, unquote. Others have said that their colleagues do not report these incidents because they, quote, don't want to get involved, unquote. That's kind of like doing a drive-by. There's an accident on the road, and you're a physician, but you don't want to get involved, so you just keep on going. As a matter of fact, you're really more involved, that doctor's really more involved, if there was an injection given in their office. So it's mandatory, it's ethically responsible for them to be recording this information and sending it in to the VAERS, the Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System, but it's not done. They also, she says, they also tell me that they have been informed that this vaccine is the safest ever developed because it is a recombinant DNA vaccine, and therefore you can't get the disease. Well, what are we doing to the DNA in the human being? We're playing with fire there. So I keep throwing in my own commentary to her article. Here she is again. She says, unfortunately, they have clearly missed a major point of basic immunology. Any peptide or protein, regardless of the source of that protein, native or from genetic engineering, when introduced into the body, will be, quote, processed by the immune system, unquote. And depending on the nature of that protein, could result in long-term immune reactions. Sadly, in basic science curriculums of medical schools, many of these details of immunology, a medical research field that has exploded over the last decade, everybody's in immunology, are not taught. In fact, I recently, and this is the doctor speaking, I recently was invited to speak at the Institute of Medicine at the National Institutes of Health on this subject. I was quite shocked when a senior member of a national health committee involved in recommending mandates for childhood vaccines came up to me and said, quote, very interesting talk. I know you teach beginning medical students. Could you recommend me a basic immunology textbook? I think I need to catch up on some of this immunology stuff, unquote. And this is a physician, a senior member of the National Health Committee. What does this tell us? As the result of extensive literature research, as well as advanced knowledge in the mechanisms of autoimmune disease and hepatitis B infection, the doctor says, I have discussed these issues with international teams of experts. We have submitted proposals to investigate the scientific basis for these adverse reactions, many which are similar to those reactions from individuals having the virus itself. Now, doesn't that tell you something? Everybody who says, I got the flu vaccination, I got the flu shot, and immediately I came down with the flu. And a lot of people who are pro-vaccine agenda, who are skeptics, who are plugging away in the comments section all over the internet would say, no, that's not, you're crazy, that's not possible, it's not true, it's a dead virus, it cannot give you the disease by getting the shot. Here she is, her credentials, saying that reactions from individuals similar to those reactions from individuals having the virus itself. It is apparent that there are major histocompatibility genetic linkages among patients who are having the severe reactions. As many as 10 to 30% are not developing antibodies since they do not respond to this vaccine and are likely not to be protected from the disease anyway. And I want to make a comment here. I don't know whether she talks about it, but I do believe that we're giving these hepatitis B vaccines to newborn babies, little infants that have not developed any immunological function at that point in their life. There's no way that they could be responding in any positive way to a vaccine given at birth. So we do have to question, what is the status of the medical system? What are they trying to do, and why are they mandating it? So she goes on in her report. In our studies, we wish to carry out research to determine the long-term prognosis of patients having such adverse reactions with the hope of developing more specific therapies. Because I have an immunology and biochemistry laboratory, we have already collected blood samples throughout the period of these adverse reactions. Therefore, we have a unique pool of serum to begin to scientifically pinpoint the reasons for the adverse reactions. We have significant preliminary evidence which may explain these responses, and we will continue to seek funding from private as well as federal sources to continue these studies. She says, it is apparent that the hepatitis B vaccine virus N vaccine developed from hepatitis B surface antigen is very unique from many other viruses and vaccines. New theories and experiments, such as molecular mimicry and anti-idiotypic antibodies, have been developed which could explain the reasons for autoimmune reactions caused by this virus or the viral protein used in the vaccine. The December 26, 1996 New York Times article, which summarizes studies on molecular mimicry theories for viruses causing autoimmune diseases, may be right on point. The fact that there are dozens of publications on the correlation of this virus as well as the vaccine with autoimmune and other connective disease disorders provides strong evidence for the correlation of this viral antigen causing autoimmune diseases. And, you know, you can hear in the tone of her talk that she's really trying to pinpoint the adverse event to the protein, the hepatitis B, and a functioning or non-functioning immune system, and really trying to delineate it for the genetic lineage of the Caucasian. Whereas we know that all across the board, in all races, people have responses, autoimmune responses, to vaccinations of all different kinds. But because she wants to focus in on her work and really research it and really get answers, this is why she is talking in a very limited way about what's going on with vaccines. She says, the FDA adverse reaction list now reports over 24,000 individuals with reported adverse reactions. If one dismisses the duplications and antibody non-responder reports, the vast majority of adults who have similar autoimmune-associated symptoms, including rash, joint pain, chronic fatigue, neurological disorders, neuritis, rheumatoid arthritis, lupus-like syndrome, and multiple sclerosis-like syndrome, there are reports by the head of the FDA that these reports indicate only about 1% of the total number of adverse reactions. And, you know, if you did read the inserts in your vaccination vial that came with your vaccination vial, you would read about all of these kinds of symptoms that would come out. The question is, she's trying to find out what is causing those adverse reactions. And we want to, you know, it would be really good to learn exactly to do all the lab work that she's doing, but find out, is it the aluminum? Is it the MSG? Is it the propylene glycol? What are the, is it some of the fetal tissue? What is it? Is it the DNA matter? What is it that is causing the adverse events? Obviously, to make safer vaccines, and also to really become educated and concerned about giving these vaccines when you know there's a percentage of the people are going to have a bad reaction. So she goes on to say that these reactions clearly appear to be genetic, an observation which may provide us with the basis to evaluate which individuals might have adverse reactions to this vaccine. And I'm just going to pause here. Barbara Lowe Fisher, the head of the NVIC, the National Vaccine Information Center, her young boy also took a number of vaccines and ended up with the autism spectrum. And she also said because of her background, her genetic makeup and background, that was what she also attributed the vaccine reaction to, and how important it is to individualize medicine for each person. The doctor continues to say, these reactions clearly appear to be genetic, and they may also provide us with information on those that are non-responders and may therefore not be protected by this vaccine, even if they receive it. And that's another issue that we really need to understand and study, that anywhere from 40 to 60 to 80% of people who take a vaccine of one kind or another are not going to have their immune system built up by it. And these vaccines, when they do have a antibody response, may last only for 3 to 6 to 12 months, meaning that they need to be revaccinated every so often. And is this the way that we want to go about healing the planet, protecting and using preventative medicine? Do we want to have to keep injecting people with all these toxins that we really don't know what they're doing? Or do we want to build up individuals through natural means, as we just heard Dr. Teresa Dale tell us, through change in diet, through nutrition, through supplements, through homeopathy, through massage, through whatever is needed that will be tailored to a person in order to help them get on the road to health. So here we are. In the meantime, how many individuals might be adversely affected before this research has been completed? And so, you know, you have to have an eye for, a heart for compassion about people who are going to be injured, and a wisdom to know what to do. She says, I have now been in direct contact with hundreds of severely ill patients. I feel as if I've read that, as well as the physicians who have hundreds more patients clearly having adverse reactions to hepatitis B. I feel that it is critical to investigate the early onset effects as well as subsequent development of autoimmune adverse reactions in the hope that we might find more direct treatment to avert the long-term effects of those already afflicted with these problems. I believe this is possible in view of new technologies for treatment of autoimmune diseases that are targeted to the identification of specific autoantibodies to defined epitopes. Now, what she's asking is that physicians comply and patients comply, that patients are given full disclosure and they're told to report back so that the physician can write up a report and send it in to be documented as part of the data collection system. So as of right now, very little of that is actually being done. She says, no one, especially myself, would ever assert that the hepatitis B virus is not causing serious health problems in the world. However, there are serious questions that remain unanswered, and here they are. She says, number one, is the hepatitis B virus, in its elegance of evolution and survival, a master of molecular mimicry, which has produced its surface protein, the one used in the vaccine, to weaken the immune system in some individuals, inducing autoimmune disease. And I'm going to continue. Can this vaccine be modified to avoid these adverse reactions, or is this a virus which needs to be controlled or eradicated by early treatment or other methods? You know, I think that the doctor should also look very carefully at the historical evidence of the life cycle of diseases and how they enter a society and a culture and how they exit. What are the situations where a particular disease is rising in the population, and what effect does it have, and how could it have entered the population? So there's a map of disease that is shown in the Los Angeles Times, showing the toll of the anti-vaccination movement in one devastating graphic, it says. And basically, you show the see a pattern that all over Africa and Asia is one rise in a disease, and in America, in the northern hemisphere of the United States and Canada, is another outbreak of a different type of disease. So you might see, let me see if I can tell you exactly what this is. Okay. The map is on the LA Times, and basically it's saying, there's been a lot of talk about it, a lot of comments, that the outbreak, measles outbreak worldwide is really covering Africa and Europe. And the whooping cough is covering the United States and some points in South America. And they attribute it to the anti-vaccination movement, which, you know, you could really, really question that. I think, you know, we as human beings can find we have our own biases. We find our own rationalizations. We look for the answers that we want to find ourselves, myself included. And, you know, we need to keep an open mind about all of it and figure out, based on the facts, the true facts, not the hidden, not what's covertly not told to us or brought up, or we have to have all the complete information in order to make a valid conclusion. So she says in her points of questions that seriously remain. Number two, can this vaccine be modified to avoid these adverse reactions, or is this virus which needs to, is it the virus that needs to be controlled or eradicated by early treatment or other methods? And, you know, where does that usually lead us? It's a battle that I don't know that we could ever win it. Number three, can we truly justify giving this vaccine to newborn infants? I'm glad she asked that. I would defy any colleague, clinician, or research scientist to claim that we have a basic understanding of the human newborn immune system. It is well established in studies in our animal models that the newborn immune system is very distinct from the adolescent or adult. In fact, we can easily perturb the immune system of the newborn in animal models to ensure that it cannot respond properly later in life. And you know, this is what's happening in society today, because these things are mandatory unless you know otherwise and get an attorney to help you write out a waiver or an exemption. Number four, can we justify mandating this vaccine for all 12-year-old children without having clear scientific and medical documentation on A, the duration of the vaccine in children of this age group, B, the number of individuals in our state population that will be non-responders to the vaccine? This is a critical question, since Section 97.67 of immunization requirements in Texas elementary and secondary schools requires that serologic confirmation be given to prove immunity. It is established that a significant percentage of individuals will not have serological immunity against the hepatitis B vaccine, regardless of immunization schedules. Furthermore, large numbers of healthcare workers who have been subjected to repeat immunization despite lack of serological immunity have reported serious adverse vaccine reactions. So people are getting sick, people are coming down with adverse reactions, and there's no real data taken on supposedly what she's calling serological immunity, which are the antibodies showing that there has been an immune and a response to wake up the immune system. However, you must recognize also something that she did say. Do we really know that much about the immune system that we can say showing a little blip on a petri dish showing that there is in a blood, that there is antibodies, is the totality of the immune system? No, it's not. A lot more goes into it than one figure. We have the fever response, we have rash response, we have emotional mental response, and those are the things that we have to natural disease. And if you're giving an artificial disease, which is basically also what homeopathy with energy medicine, if you're giving an artificial disease to an individual through an injection, you would also expect to see an immune response. And potentially, because we put so much stuff in it, you're sensitizing, hypersensitizing the individual to have an autoimmune response. Hypersensitivity. And this is why we see today so many people allergic to everything in their environment, including things like peanuts, because peanut oil and other things are put into vaccines. So we're really changing the life of individuals and their ability for their immune system to function properly. And she says, number C, letter C, the risk of lifelong permanent disability due to this vaccine, the hepatitis B, and the risks among different population groups. She wants to look at that. She says, if this or any other vaccine, by nature of the protein or parts of the protein, native or produced from the cDNA as a recombinant protein, has the ability to adversely affect the immune system of large numbers of individuals, resulting in severe adverse reactions, even if restricted to some genetic populations, then the public reaction to all vaccines, including those that clearly don't have adverse reactions, will be doomed in the public's eye. And she's correct. It's already happened. It's already there. People are wary. People are skeptical. People are afraid. People don't want to have an adverse reaction. People have no people, their neighbors, their friends, their relatives, their family, who have children who have Crohn's disease or irritable bowel or asthma or other kind of skin diseases or autism. And that the people believe that is due to this autoimmune response from vaccinations. And as that word continues to spread further and further, people are going to be wary about taking any vaccine. And she's afraid that this is not a good thing to do. She says, that includes the development of vaccines to evolving airborne viruses, which might become a legitimate threat to our society. And I don't know whether she's talking or referring to bioterrorism, but that is happening in our world today. Viruses are being developed to use in warfare as a military threat. And when she says the cDNA as a recombinant protein, meaning basically that it's like GMOs, we're changing the DNA in the life of the individual. They didn't. Their soul energy didn't come down to the planet to have their DNA changed. But that's really partially what vaccines are doing. We're changing the human being. She says, thanks to the success of the Human Genome Project and advances in computer programs, it may be possible to evaluate potential molecular structure to predict these problems in advance. While pharmaceutical companies complain that extended clinical trials would cost too much, they brag to their shareholders about profits of mandated vaccines. So that's what's going on behind the curtains. They are making hand over fist billions, if not trillions, of dollars from developing and giving these vaccines continuously, year after year, to whole populations. And I see that she has a legitimate concern about vaccines, but she does believe that science will conquer. She says, in conclusion, I would like to relate an observation. In my research on vaccines that have been used successfully for the humane control of animal populations, I have had the opportunity to observe firsthand African elephant family behavior. Whenever a baby cries, the entire herd of up to 100 will immediately trumpet and charge with great flurry to surround the infant elephant. When it is apparent that there is no danger, they will, one by one, touch trunks with that infant, ensuring that he is okay before going about their business. They would certainly never allow a single baby or family member to be exposed to unknown danger. She says, I would simply ask you in your serious charge of maintaining our public health system that you, as our friends, the elephants, listen to the cry of every baby and family member that might be at risk and demand that you have adequate scientific and medical information to make responsible decisions. I thank you for your attention and would be glad to answer any questions or provide you with additional information. Sincerely, Bonnie S. Dunbar, PhD professor, Department of Cell Biology, Baylor College of Medicine, 1 Baylor Plaza, Houston, Texas. And this was written by her, in her voice, as a citizen, as a concerned citizen of Texas, with a lot of credentials and background in immunology behind her. And she is questioning it, and we all need to question it, and we all need to get behind her and say, let us rethink what we're doing with vaccines, and why are we injecting little babies with the hepatitis B vaccine in particular. So I want to thank you all. You know, it's almost been 2 full hours of this show, and these shows are archived that you can listen to them at any time. You can download them to your computer. You can get them onto your iTunes. You can use it as a podcast. You can share it on Twitter and on Facebook with friends. You can even get that little widget and put that onto your own website so you can listen. Hey, I forgot about Pinterest. Pinterest is there too, and many other social networks. So I encourage you to share. And this is really important news. In addition, I wanted to mention anything else on Homeopathy World Community. There's been a lot of activity lately on the website. You can, if you want, using other means of boosting your immune system. Sunlight, vitamin D, you know, it's strange. She did not even go into any of that. She kept it very scientifically based, very focused on one issue. But what about boosting the immune system of entire populations with vitamin D3, with vitamin C, with vitamin K, you know, all these different things that we have, vitamin E, with magnesium, all these different things that we have as supplements today. And there's plenty of scientific evidence to base those decisions on. So do your surfing on the internet. Use startpage.com if you like. And we have sunshinesciences.com. You can get a 10% off purchasing those wonderful light bulbs, full spectrum, complete white light, makes you feel happy, and they're almost exactly like sunlight, a very different color that you would notice from your other kinds of bulbs, which are more on the yellow, orange, or blue range. Very good for people who are affected with seasonal affective disorder, which is very kind of like depression because there's not enough sunlight during the winter and during the autumn days. We're slowly heading out toward that, but it still does get dark early in the day. The other thing that we have on Homeopathy World Community, I'm going to remind you about Stop Trans-Pacific Partnership. And anyone there who is interested in boosting, learning about their gut environment, about probiotics, about good nutrition, there's the Gluten Summit. And I think there's going to be an update with that about the end of January, something like January 30th. And there's going to be a whole new itinerary, a whole new program, guest list of like 25 people speaking. And it's going to be most likely the same way that they did the first program, which means if you watch it live, it's going to be free. If you miss a show, if you miss a day, then there's going to be a fee. So take a little bit of notice about that, and I do believe it's going to be something like January 30th. The other thing is we have the Complete Dynamics in Homeopathy. It is the tool that I use to study my materia medica, my remedies, and do repertorization. There's a free download for the trial version. And if you really love it and want to store and save your analysis, then I recommend getting paying for the program. It's very, very worthwhile to get that license. The other thing that's available on Homeopathy World Community are a whole slew of books, recommended books from Narayana Publishers. There's a little banner on the right-hand side that will take you over to a whole list of recommended books. And I hope that you enjoy those. And in fact, there is a link to the solution, Homeoprophylaxis. That is a book by Kate Birch and Scylla Watcott. They have been on the health show numerous times with me. They have been on Blog Talk Radio numerous times. They have been doing homeoprophylaxis. So instead of actually going through the regular childhood vaccinations, a lot of parents would like to use homeopathic nosos, homeopathic remedies in this way to build the immunity of their child, educate the immune system to recognize what is me and what is not me. And that's basically the whole point of the immune system, to know when to fight, when to say, I do not want this virus, this bacteria in my body, it's not doing me any good, this mold, and you're using a homeopathic remedy to educate the immune system. And also, if you like, we have so many archives of old shows from the last 4 years. Once a month on Wednesday, we have Dr. Christina Chambreau, Doctor of Veterinary Medicine, come on Wednesday at about 10:30 in the morning Eastern Time, talking about pets and your health. And if you have any questions, and she's gone, I don't know how many shows we've done with her talking about what are the effects on animals to repeated vaccinations. What about annual rabies or annual other kinds of required vaccines for animals, and what they have found out, how rheumatoid arthritis in those animals, also gut problems of digestion, violent or lack of energy, chronic fatigue, and a change in the emotional and mental status of a pet, a loved pet, simply if you notice the, again, the proximity of time of cause and effect of was that animal vaccinated and what did you write in your journal about the change in that animal. We also have older shows, marvelous, wonderful shows that were done a while back with Dr. Adil Chimthalawala Kasim of India, a cardiologist who specializes in heart patients using homeopathy very, very successfully. And Kavitha Kukunur, who has written a book, an inspirational book, Beyond the Limits, and that is really motivational to read her story, her journey from India to America. And lastly, in memory of Kaviraj, who was an agro-homeopath, we also have on the Blog Talk Radio shows a whole series of agricultural homeopathic talks and remedies to boot. And there are books that you can get. If you're getting ready to do an organic garden, there are books that you can get dealing with your plants in your garden, mold, mildew, insects, soil enhancement, all sorts of things to make your garden grow better. So I'm going to end today's show. I want to thank everybody so much for tuning in, listening. If you stuck it out the whole way, I really applaud you. I know 2 hours is a long time to listen. And don't forget, tomorrow at 1 p.m. with Alan Phillips, we will be back Eastern Time, 1 p.m. in the afternoon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio with homeopath Debbie Brock and special guests. We encourage you to follow our show, favorite the show, click the reminder button to receive email notices when shows air, share with your friends on Facebook and Twitter, send in your comments and questions. See you the next time.
Kill him and Jarrah Tanzania. Homeoprophy has the normal people.
compatible.